Hello, and welcome to the African Export-Import Bank 2019 H1 results call. My name is Val, and I will be your coordinator for today's event. For the duration of the call, you will be on listen only. However, you will have the opportunity to ask questions at the end of the presentation. This can be done by pressing star one to register your question at any time. If at any point you require assistance, please press star zero on your telephone keypad and you will be connected to an operator. I am now handing you over to your host, Rahul Shah, to begin today's conference. Thank you.
Thank you, operator. Good morning and good afternoon to all our participants, and thanks for joining. My name is Rahul Shah, and on behalf of Thelema, I'd like to welcome you to today's Afreximbank H1 2019 results call. Please note that during the course of this event, we will be referring to the slide pack that is available on the IR section of Afreximbank's website, afreximbank.com. It's my pleasure to introduce our two main speakers, Dr. George Elhedery, who is Executive Vice President for Governance, Legal, and Corporate Services, and Mr. Nyavero Hlupo, who is Chief Financial Officer. We will begin with some prepared remarks before opening the lines up for the Q&A session. With that introduction, I shall hand over the call to Dr. Elhedery and Mr. Hlupo. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Rahul and Emma, and thanks everyone who is on the other side of the line for being able to make it. What we have here would quickly run down very short presentation, a few minutes on where we stand in the first half of the year. The last time we met, I think, was in May, and that was to do the full year for 2018. We now have some figures on a detailed build in the D, but some good figures for first half of 2019. As you may have looked seen through, they do suggest an organization which is making tremendous progress on its financial side, but for us, even more significant on its relevance. For that relevance, it's what, for us, it's going to provide the opportunities for growth and for growth in a secure manner as we get the support of the state. We thought we should emphasize that question of our mandate, which gives us the relevance, and through which we do attract the kind of business that gives the kind of returns which we think to strengthen that mandate. That's also done through the preferred creditor status. I'm referring to slide number five, which is the first slide, but it's number five. That status then gives some treatment to the loans and the credit activities in the member countries, which also do provide some tax benefits. You would then see that that's an organization with over 71 billion of trade finance support since inception and 7 billion of disbursements since 2018 only, with a much larger commitment to manufactured exports. We do have strong equity now, slightly stronger than it was when we last reported, and the returns, the risk are also slightly less. The strategy remains for us the same, as you would see in slide seven. That slide number seven, the strategy still remains an intra-African trade to support that and light industrialization. Those two are the strong pillars, plus the need for financial performance. We take the light industrialization as extremely significant because that's where the continent is moving as a whole, and that's where we see the opportunity, the single most important opportunity for growth, which would justify the level of income and the performance, the financial performance that we see for ourselves. As more interest is taken in the continent, the direction is towards slightly changing the focus of African trade from just rare commodities to some level of processing, And it is that level of processing that would support intra-African trade itself, and that would provide the opportunity for growth. It is also our intention to diversify a little, to take advantage of the Continental Free Trade Area Agreement just signed, and which is now coming into force, the growth opportunities that that would present, to again make an impact on in terms of our relevance to the member countries. You would therefore see on slide 8 that we have now put in place a series of products, instruments, different methods of intervention to take advantage of these opportunities, and then to increase the different income lines in the organization, which will then help us to achieve the growth in income, which would enable us to achieve the further growth in assets that we see in the coming years. So the countercyclical liquidity program was liquidated, but as a product, it remains to deal with emergency situations should any country be in real emergency, and that then would demonstrate our relevance to those. We are working with the African Union to develop the Pan-African Payment System, which we call PAPS. That received the endorsement of the African Heads of State when they met in Niger this year when launching the CFTA, and the intention is that the Afreximbank payment system is made one of the protocols under the one of the annexes to the trade protocols of the CFTA, so that it is adopted as a continent-wide platform. So that is going to quite significantly increase the income on the fee side. The Private Equity Fund for Export Development, we are actively pursuing that, since the intention is to also establish that with all the treaty benefits. So we see some engagement we are undertaking with the states so that that treaty can be signed and it comes into force. We have a due diligence platform to try and de-risk the perception of African companies, and that would also increase the lines for fee income, the opportunities for fee income, and tremendous funding which we're getting from the central bank, again demonstrating our relevance to the states. Many of the central banks are now agreed to slightly alter their investment guidelines so that they are able to retain some of their reserves with the African Export Import Bank. We think with all of those in place, the prospects look quite positive for us. Maybe our colleagues would now help to run you down the financials very quickly for the first half.
Good morning, and thank you very much. If I take you to slide number 10, it shows you the strong growth in the balance sheet, which has increased by 15% in terms of total assets from 13.4 billion to 15.4 billion. On the right-hand side gives you the main asset composition, which is largely driven by our loans and advances, which comprise 74.1% compared to 83% the previous year. So loans and cash, which is a 23.5%, comprise the biggest asset base. And that obviously then drives, as you will note further down, that drives the income levels and income volumes. If we take you to the next slide, which is on page 11, it just shows you the funding sources to support that balance sheet, where we have got 20% coming through from debt, 40% coming through from banks, 18% being funded from equity, and 23% being funded from deposits and customer accounts. On the back of that, it is also important to highlight that the equity base and capital adequacy ratios will remain strong. The bank is acutely aware of the need to ensure that the capital adequacy follows or is supported by the business volumes. So to that extent, management are looking at keeping an eye on the capital adequacy ratio to ensure that the bank's levels of business are supported by the resources that are generated internally, as well as externally with the shareholder support. As at the end of the year, we had a very strong liquidity ratio, which basically measures the cash to total assets. This is in anticipation of the disbursements and activity levels that are expected in the second half of the year, which has traditionally been the biggest part of the business of the year. Most of the facilities increase as our counterparties in the form of banks and trade finance facilities increase towards the end of the year. Focusing on the net loans on page 12, you see that the net loans themselves have gone up by 2.7% when you compare the full year 2018 and 2019. And in terms of the split of the program, 75% of our lines are basically made up of direct financing and lines of credit. And when you look at the split in terms of the sector, 49% is provided through the financial services sector, 11% to manufacturing sector, 20% to energy and mining, and the others are comprising 18%. So that kind of gives you the split in terms of the portfolio. In terms of the geographical distribution, 43%, which is the biggest part, is in West Africa, driven largely by Nigeria, followed by North Africa, 31%, which is largely driven by Egypt. And then Southern Africa at 19.2%, we expect it to grow in future following the coming on board of South Africa. And East Africa, 6.7%, we expect that region being a significant part in terms of the growth statistics of Africa. We expect that to grow. In terms of the non-performing loans, we're looking at 3% as at the end of June 19 compared to 3% 2018 and 2.5% in 2017. Loan coverage ratio is basically within acceptable levels. Our minimum level is 100%, and that basically measures our provisions in relation to, outstanding amounts that are not performing, and we compare that to the provisions that we would have made and the related collateral. There's been a sustained income growth, which culminated at 498 in terms of gross income as at the end of 19. Compared to 344, the comparative period for 2018, an increase of 44%. In terms of operating income, we're sitting at 32% growth. And in terms of net income, we're sitting at 138 million, which is an increase of 81% over the same period in 2018. And that is largely driven by the increase in the volume of business over the comparative period. In terms of just indicators or statistics, net interest margin, our target is 3 to 3.5%. If you look at 17 to 19, we're looking at 2.9 to 3.4%. In terms of net interest income, we've spoken about that. Cost to income ratio, our target is a minimum of, we're looking at around 20%, but as you can see, there's a significant improvement in H1 19, and that's largely because of the significant growth in net interest income. In terms of net income, we've spoken about it, from 2017, 117 million to 137 million in 2019. You will see a dip in 2018. That is as a result of what we would call a prior period error or adjustment. Okay, let me not say an error. It's a restatement of our provisions, which were previously, as at the end of June last year, were shown at 30 million, but we have had to restate that in terms of IFRS 9, so that it could be compared with the same period for 2019. Return on average equity, we're looking at 2017, 13.9 and 10.5 in 2019. Our average and target is basically 10%. Return on average assets, our target is 2%. We are slightly below that, but we believe it's at 2%, it's a sustainable level. Page 17 summarizes, I think, information that you already have, which is our net loans, total assets, total liabilities, and shareholder funds, as well as income growth, which we, I think, have covered. Page 18 gives you the key financial ratios. Fee income to gross income, hovering around the 5%, net interest margin, we have dealt with cost to income ratio, return on average equity, return on average assets, cash to total assets, NPL ratio, and NPL coverage ratio. Page 18 kind of summarizes most of the issues that we have discussed in terms of indicators, in terms of performance. And I think I've also touched on what we believe are sustainable levels into the future. I shall conclude at that stage and allow EVP to summarize the issues with respect to the presentation.
Thank you, Nabil. There we go. That's an institution with some strong potential for growth due to the direction of focus that we think we should be having in the years to come, like manufacturing, in the continental free trade area, take the advantages which it presents, diversifying furthermore into Southern and East Africa. And that, we believe, would help us sustain the double digits in our equity levels and in our profitability. We think those, combined with the relevance which the state still think we have, if you present to you an institution, you can have tremendous trust in. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Operator, could we open the lines for Q&A, please?
Oh, yes.
Of course. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Please ensure your line remains unmuted locally. You will be prompted when to ask your question. And the first question comes from the line of Barbik Bisset from Axis Stockbroking. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I just had a couple of questions. The first is I wanted to understand, you know, your deposit base, what sort of, clients are placing deposits with the Afrexim. And my second question was more on moving towards Basel III, because I noted your adequacy ratios today are still computed on Basel II. So I'm wondering when you're transitioning over to Basel III. And also, would you have any self-imposed minimum requirements on the different ratios? Thank you.
The deposit of Douglas, did you want to help them with the composition of the deposit?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, I think it's okay if you leave it in the middle. It should work. Yeah,
thank you very much for that question. So for our deposits, we have got different type of investors. We have got central banks. that is from Africa. We also have other corporates that include sovereign wealth funds, that include insurance companies, as well as the commercial banks from Africa. In terms of tenor, on average, we have got about, they deposit up to 1 year, but of course some do 30 days, 90 days, but they roll over after every maturity, which gives us the confidence that the funds are stable. In terms of pricing for those deposits, it's actually money market deposits. So you notice that we will normally benchmark them to LIBOR or any other benchmark rate. Thank you. In terms of Basel, the calculation of our liquidity cover ratios, yes, we actually look at Basel in our day-to-day calculations of the ratio. But the one that our colleague presented, this is just the our it looks at the liquidity over the total assets. So it's not Basel, but we've got the Basel numbers as well.
I just wanted to add on the Basel question, just to mention that we've chosen to adopt some aspects of Basel III as appropriate. So as mentioned by my colleagues, on the liquidity side, we've adopted LCR, we've adopted NSFR, and so we're using those ones. But we're looking at a holistic project to go Basel III. But as you know, there are changes under Basel III also, with Basel IV coming on board. So we thought that, we would wait a little to see what happens on that side, and then we adopt something that is more sustainable. For now, we've chosen to adopt certain key matrices under Basel III as appropriate, and we've done that for the liquidity risk management profile.
And then I think with respect to minimum ratios, in terms of net interest margin, we're looking at about 3 to 3.5%. Cost-to-income ratio, the target is 20 to 30%. Return on equity, we're looking at a sustainable minimum level of 10%. With respect to Tier 1 capital, we're looking at a minimum threshold of 20%. I think that covers some of the key indicators or parameters that we try and work within.
Thank you.
We have no further questions in the queue. Just another reminder, please press star 1 if you'd like to ask a question. And there is a question that just came through from the line of Christian Rigo from RNB. Please go ahead.
Hello, good afternoon. Good morning. Thank you for the presentation. Just got a couple of questions. First, I just want to find out, with the growth in Southern Africa, which countries have been driving this growth? And on the project finance, I see, like, well, not just that project finance has grown. And with this, so what are the expected sort of credit losses going forward? Should we be concerned about the amount of provisioning that you take on these sort of project finance structures? Thank you.
In terms of the growth in Southern Africa, we are obviously looking at South Africa. It only became a member in the last few years, and we expect South Africa to be the key driver of the business in Southern Africa. But we're also looking at all the other countries like Angola, Zambia. Zimbabwe is still also an active player in that respect. In terms of project finance, we're still at an infant stage. Obviously, these will be like a long-term project. We don't expect to see any significant impact in terms of the ECL. But of course, as you know, having adopted IFRS 9, you necessarily have to make provisions for facilities on the basis of probability of default as opposed to the actual act of default. So to the extent that some of the provisions will basically be collective or general provisions, We do not expect to see anything specific and significant around the project finance in Africa at this stage.
The next question comes from the line of Jake Ward from Ashmore. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the call. Just two questions, if I may. Firstly, on the fee income side of things, it looks to have come in a little bit lighter for the first half. Is your expectation for the of a stronger second half, given that these advisory fees can sometimes be a bit lumpy? And then secondly, I wondered if you had any further update on whether you've had any communication with the Mauritius Stock Exchange to get your share count updated, because I still believe you're roughly seventh in the SCM 10 list. Thanks.
With respect to the fee income, obviously our fee income is driven by the kind of mandates that we are running in Africa. And sometimes it's mandate-based, and it's based on projects that are completed. Our view is that, and the action on the ground is that we expect the non-funded or the fee income to be quite significant as we progress, maybe in the region of 12 to 15% on a sustainable basis, 15% of gross income. And we think there are huge opportunities where the local either governments or corporates seem to trust the experience that we have in terms of bringing in skills on board and probably linking them to international funders or technical partners. I think it has also become kind of elevated by what is happening between China and the U.S., where I think there are huge opportunities for bringing in Chinese investors into Africa. So we think there is an opportunity to play significant advisory roles and thereby increasing the income in that area. For the current year, there are quite a number of transactions or deals that are in the pipeline that are being worked on, and we hope a significant part of that will be concluded before the end of the year, thereby ensuring that some of the income will really be realized before the end of the year. With respect to the Mauritius,
regarding the question on the stock exchange of Mauritius, as you remember, after the quarterly rebalance of June, we have been included on the stock exchange of Mauritius with a position of number 7. We have contacted the head of listing on the stock exchange of Mauritius, and they take into consideration the float only for the listing shares. They would not take into calculation the overall market capitalization of the bank. So in that respect, they would not alter their calculation methods. Should the float increase in the future, obviously our positioning in the our weighting in the index would increase accordingly.
Okay, perfect. So I guess based on current float, then we shouldn't expect any change in that in where you're sat in the index. Is that correct? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, they use the float indeed.
Of course. Okay, perfect. Thanks for that. Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Ayu Salami from Duet. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I have a couple of questions. The first one on your P&L is, your credit loan loss provision jumped up by almost 40% if I looked at it year on year. Given that the bank has the special relationship that you have preferred creditor status in most of the countries where you operate, is there any possibility for write-backs on these loan losses? And also, why has it jumped so, what's driven such a big jump of almost 40% just on a year-on-year basis? The second question relates to, again, looking at the P&L for your P&L numbers. The fair value gain or loss on derivatives turned from a loss last year of about $15 million to a profit of $12.5 million. Can you give some more color on what type of derivative instruments these are and why there seems to be such volatility in that line of the P&L.
With respect to the ECL provision, IFRS 9, which we adopted and restated our 2018 numbers, brings in necessarily an element of increased provisioning. And that is really on the basis that, number one, the number of financial instruments that you bring for ECL provisioning is now more than in the past. So, for instance, you would start to have the off-balance sheet items, they become part of the provisioning. Some of your investments also are part of the ECL provisioning, so that causes an increase. But largely, it's driven by the increase in our in the growth in the loan portfolio. So that's where the biggest ECL provision comes from. But that doesn't necessarily relate to specific provisions. The bulk of that, in fact, I would say almost 65% of that is collective provisioning, which is not necessarily specific. So it's not necessarily an indicator at this stage of the quality of the asset, but it's more forward-looking, and I think the IFRS 9 is clear. It's trying to make sure that banks are more prepared to deal with the situations that were experienced in 2008 in America. The second aspect that you raise, which is to do with the income statement relating to the fair value adjustment, that is the nature of the instruments that we have are basically interest rate swaps. So generally, the provision on the gain or loss is largely determined by how far you are to the end of that transaction and the perception of the counterparties that are involved. So the further you are from the end of the life of the instrument, the more volatility that is there. But as you get closer to the end of the instrument, which is where we are now, in fact, when we look at our position as we project to the end of the year, we actually believe that we'll be in a profitable situation. So it should not be. It's really a repricing of your instrument to market perception at every stage. But let me just say the expert, the treasurer, to.
I'll just add one point. The other key issue is the LIBOR, because the floating part is benchmarked to LIBOR. So you notice that last year LIBOR was going up, but now LIBOR has started to go down. So that affects the valuation.
Okay, thank you very much.
We have no further questions in the queue, so I'll just another reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, press star 1 on your keypad.
Thank you. Perhaps while we wait for any more questions to come in, I could ask a couple from my side. The first one is just looking at your cash holdings. They seem to be high relative to history. Are you expecting any big ticket loans to come through? Can you give us some guidance on how you see the loan book evolving in H2? So that's my first question. The second one is, given what you said about changes in geographic profile and product mix, would you say risk costs should rise or fall relative to current levels on, let's say, a two-year view? Thank you.
Well, could you take the first question over again? You're referring to any expectations and any big tickets?
Sorry, I was just observing that you have quite a lot of cash on your balance sheet at the moment, and so I was wondering if you expect that to be deployed and if you could give some guidance on your loan growth.
Right. The well, go ahead.
Okay. The expectation is that traditionally, our counterparties who are the local financial institutions on the continent, normally the demand for facilities or lines of credit increases in the second half of the year. And that takes up, as we have said before, about 49% of our total exposure. So we are expecting big transactions to be happening before the end of December. In fact, as we sit now, we have got quite a bit that is going through, that is at various stages of evaluation and processing. So yes, we expect a significant part of that cash balances to be deployed. In fact, the treasurers are actually in the process of looking for more money to be able to meet the funding required, the expected funding requirements by the end of the year.
On the question around cost of risk, if I understood you correctly, was what's our target? Was that right?
Yeah, if you could just give some medium-term guidance on where you think that
outlook
should be.
Okay. So from a risk-based pricing perspective, our range is between 1 to 1.5%.
Thank you very much.
We have no further questions in the queue, so I'll turn the call back to your host.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I guess we should end the call there. Thanks to all the participants for joining and for your questions. And of course, thank you to Dr. Lombi, Mr. Lupo, and the rest of the Afexim Bank team. If you do have any additional follow-up needs, please don't hesitate to contact either your Telema representative or the Afexim Bank IR team, who can be reached at emir@afreximbank.com. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining today's call. You may now disconnect your handsets. Host, please stay on the line.